All right. Welcome to another episode of Autodesk Digital Builder Podcast. I am your host, Eric Thomas. Today, we are in Boston at the Technology Center here in the Autodesk office. I have the pleasure of speaking with Evan Riley, the Senior Emerging Technology Engineer with Skanska, and Fope Betamosi, the Circular Economy and Construction Researcher here with Autodesk. And the Technology Center, for those that aren't super familiar, is located in Boston's Seaport Innovation District. And this provides access to large format fabrication equipment. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can see it all around me right now. If you're watching or listening rather on Spotify or Apple, you should head over to YouTube and check this out because we're in a very cool space right now. There's a wide range of robots, training, and you know everybody working here has a lot of opportunities to learn from expertise from Autodesk personnel. The spaces really bring together a global network of leaders, fabrication workshops, innovative ideas, and we get to bring cross-industry experience, which is what we're doing today, and really test and try out new advanced processes. So both of you have been heavily rooted in the tech center, and I'm excited to learn a bit more about that and a whole lot more with construction. Of course, since we are here together in the Technology Center in Boston, and both of you have had projects that are connected to this space, I want to hear more about your experience working here. And so, Evan, can you give me a high-level overview of your experience and you know some of the projects you've touched?
Absolutely. Thank you, Eric. Thrilled to be here, a long-time listener of the podcast, so honored to be back in Boston. So last year, we formed a team at Skanska, and we joined the residency program in order to test Spot, the robot dog from Boston Dynamics. And before we deployed the robot to any of our job sites in Boston, we actually made use of this great space here as kind of a controlled lab environment to get more familiar with controlling Spot, mission planning. It was really a unique opportunity for us to leverage the expertise at Autodesk in terms of robotics, in terms of fabrication, also an opportunity to really work out some of the kinks before we felt comfortable taking the robot out of the lab. My colleague, Brooke Gemmel, who was actually on a previous episode of the
podcast. Her episode just came out recently.
We had
a great conversation.
Yep. So the two of us co-led that effort, and she was actually able to present some of our research findings at AU back in November. And it was a great opportunity. It actually triggered some follow-up conversations about job site robotics in general, both internally and externally. So really happy to be back in this great space that we used as a testing bed.
Yeah, it's a cool catalyst and a really nice environment to, you know, try these things. And it's like a safe space to do that because you have so many opportunities and so much expertise to come in here, which we're actually very fortunate because you come from the other side of things in supporting some of these teams. And so I'd love to hear more about your experience and how you've been working in the tech center.
So I'm a researcher with the AEC Industry Futures team at Autodesk Research. And our job is to collaborate with, you know, people like Evan, so industry experts and customers to determine their needs, how they work, and the challenges they face so we can both together come up with solutions to help them do their jobs better. So in our research with industry customers, we typically come away with key insights and we get to test and validate new design to make technology, some of which even end up finding homes in Autodesk products, like the generative design feature in Revit, for example. And as Evan mentioned, the Technology Center presents like a controlled, simulated real-life environment where you get to collaborate with researchers and the Technology Center shop supervisors to prototype and validate whatever hands-on research you're doing, which usually tends to require some to scale models, so like a real life scale model. I was recently on a team that completed the DAR 5-meter bridge, which we printed right over there.
That was the one that was at AU, right?
That was the one that was at AU. And together, everyone on the team, internal and external collaborators, were able to bring that project to life. The goal was to imagine how a robot would 3D print an infrastructure of its own with little to no human input. And we were able to do that. And that's showcases, I think, the extent of collaboration we do with customers, residents of the outside network, Autodesk researchers, and the Technology Center shop staff.
It's really cool how these two come together and your perspectives are different because you're out on project sites, you're touching the technology in more of a actual out in the field setting, and you get to connect all of the great work that you're doing together. And the spaces seems to be a fantastic unifier to achieve both of those goals at the same time. So I appreciate that context. It's great to bring both of you together to connect the dots there for everybody else who's not familiar with this space. So Evan, you mentioned in an earlier discussion that we had that technology became a core element of your career, really influenced the role that you have at Skanska today. Do you have any advice for others out there who are looking to move forward in their careers and specifically looking to distinguish themselves with technology? Like, what's your journey look like in that realm? And what would you tell somebody else who wanted to follow in your footsteps?
Absolutely. You know, I think no matter what role or department you're in, technology and this digital mindset can really help you excel at your job. It can provide a way to, you know, set yourself apart from others. In my role, throughout my career so far, I've naturally kind of gravitated towards technology, whether it was model-based estimating when I was in pre-con, or drones, underground modeling, or laser scanning when I was a project engineer. Partly because I saw those as learning opportunities, but also because I really wanted to push the envelope on my project or for my project team. I think, you know, navigating your career or your early career in this industry, you know, it means having respect for the expertise that's out there, the people that have been doing things a certain way and the way things are done today, but also having, you know, an eye on the future as well. So my advice would also be, you know, not to focus on learning technology skills for the sake of technology, but also really using it as a conversation starter, a way to learn more about a process, a problem, and also to learn more about people. So to kind of tie that back to the research that we did with Spot, yes, we were investigating the reliability and the agility of the hardware, the robot, but we were also able to uncover a lot about human behavior and what, you know, the human element, the human aspect of having a robot on a job site and, you know, maintaining clean, safe job sites.
And people listening will laugh because I say augmentation all the time now. It's a big aspect of this, but you made two points that I think are really important for others to consider. And as you get down that technology journey, I'm learning time and time again that people still are the connecting thread. And you made a fantastic point of you're not going to go on a project site and you're going to talk to a superintendent who's been doing something for 30 years and say, nah, get out of here with that. Here's this tech tool that you've never seen. Go do that. That's not a approach that is going to, one, be received very well, but two, the learning and the experience that the people that have been in this industry for so long have is instrumental in ensuring that the technology that we're trying and experimenting in places like this and elsewhere is going to be successful. And so if you could bridge those gaps, it's a really beautiful two-way learning opportunity. And it might have been Brooke who was telling me this at AU. It might have been somebody else. I can't remember. If Brooke, if you're listening and you weren't the one, I'm sorry. But the pairing of somebody who is younger and potentially more tech savvy and has some different innovative ideas with the industry with those supers and foremen and other people in the field who have 20, 30, 40 years of experience is really enlightening for our industry at large, because the knowledge sharing is not a one-way street in that situation. And especially if those people start moving closer to retirement, we need that knowledge. We need to get it into the heads of everybody else who's still here building and, you know, meeting the needs of everybody out there in the world. It's an exciting moment. And I'm glad we finally have purpose-built technology where there was none 15 or 20 years ago. But we also have to be mindful in the human element as we bring that all to market. There's a lot to be thought of. But yeah, it's cool that you can differentiate yourself like that.
Just to add to that, I mean, I completely agree that, you know, the knowledge transfer or the learning has to go both ways, but it can also be really rewarding for both parties. And technology, again, is not the silver bullet, but I feel like it's a conversation starter. It's a way for us to learn more, you know, dig a little bit deeper into a problem or challenge and learn more about the people aspect.
Yeah, we get to layer the technology to solve problems and allow people to do what people do better and let the technology do things that people can't do at scale or as safely. There's so many nuances to it. But even just based on what we've talked about so far, it's clear that you've had very different roles within the AEC industry, even though they have a very obvious intersection from what we've talked about here. So Evan, can you give me the 10,000 foot view of how your expectations about your career differed from what actually unfolded and what you're actually doing in your day-to-day role right now?
Yeah. So I'll start with today. So I'm part of our national emerging tech team at Skanska, which we're tasked with basically helping research and evaluate new solutions for our project teams, documenting pilots of new technology, training, connecting people, and also just promoting kind of a culture of innovation. Specifically, I focus on laser scanning, managing our drone program and data. But if I go back, you know, 7 years ago when I was studying civil engineering, and doing my first couple internships in construction, I was keenly aware that I was joining the industry at a really exciting time in terms of digitization, in terms of investment and startup activity. But given everything that I also heard about labor challenges and declining productivity, you know, the graph that we see in every slide deck.
Yeah, the McKinsey one, that needs to go away because I disagree with it so very much as far as how productive and innovative our industry is today. It's changed so much.
Right. But that was very much the messaging when I was in school. But I think I expected there actually to be a lot of resistance to trying new things, encouraging new ideas, you know, creative problem solving, especially for someone in their early stages of the career. And I was definitely wrong about that. I would say that, you know, even though we're in a risk-averse industry, there really is a willingness to try new things, to hear people out if they have an idea, to experiment. You know, especially at Skanska, we really have embraced this kind of culture of being a team of innovators and connecting the dots in our organization. But I also think, I used to think coming out of school that, you know, all of the creative, innovative ideas originated from an innovation group. I now, you know, have come to understand over the last 7 years that really those ideas come from our project teams. They come from operations, the people that are closest to the work. And, you know, our mandate as an innovation group is really just to support them. Yeah, to support them and foster that culture of failing fast. And
culture is the key word there to me, because you can set your organization up to encourage people to bring new ideas and also try things. If when you try something and fail and it's a punitive response, nobody's going to bring new ideas to the table because that's personal risk for them. They don't want to do it. And so I'm seeing our industry evolve and be more open to those conversations. I've also seen and been in those rooms where there's a bid review that lasted 8 hours and there are grown men screaming at each other inside of the table. I feel like we're starting to move away from that, which is really encouraging. And I think that's also a requirement to get the younger generations involved, because they see that and they go, I don't want anything to do with that. And so we're at an exciting moment. There's some challenges, I think, coming with the labor shortages and all the other fun things that, you know, we talk about every day. Fun is obviously not the right descriptor there, but, you know, we're getting there. And so, Fope, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts in contrast, too. So when you stepped foot into, you know, your career path with construction, what did that look like in your mind compared to what you're doing today?
Yeah, I think trying new things is what got me to where I am today also. So like I said, I'm a researcher. So really my day-to-day is really about exploring the latest and greatest advanced practices and technology and seeing how that impacts the way we construct buildings. And at the same time, trying to address some of the global challenges that's associated with all of that. Looking back, I really didn't think I was going to end up like being a construction technology researcher. Like 15-year-old me wanted to be an architect. I didn't even know that construction management or building engineering, which was the degree I got as undergrad, was potentially a career path or option for me. And after graduation, you know, my first big girl job was working with my state government on refurbishing public schools and public housing. And for me, and at that time, I thought my career would be very much field oriented, trying to implement some affordable housing solutions in Nigeria or sub-Saharan Africa. And that's what I thought my entire life or career was going to be. But, you know, that experience opened me up to a lot of the inadequacies in the ecosystem of construction in Nigeria. So I decided to like get a master's degree in the US and see what I can learn to take back to Nigeria and help fix some of the problems. And it was through that process I got introduced to construction technology, and I got really interested with the application of drones and AR, VR, laser scanners and all of that in construction processes. And that's been the trajectory of my career for a couple of years. And I ended up just specializing in advanced construction technologies. And afterward, it seems like, oh, academia is the next best thing, doing research and teaching. But that takes a lot of your time with teaching. So that's how I ended up at Autodesk, is really just trying to question the way things are done. I think you had kind of mentioned that having that problem-solving mindset, like questioning the norm, how can we do things better? How can we make more sustainable practices or use technology to optimize the traditional processes that we've always done. So while I didn't end up on the field, I think some of the work that we do is set up to empower folks that are on the front line, on the field, doing the work, helping them to make decisions and improve some of the processes they're doing to help tackle all these problems that everyone's talking about.
And it's a multi-layered conversation that we're having too. And I'm just encouraged by people like yourselves who are given the space to ask questions and think about how could we do it differently. Because I think long-term, one of the risks to our industry is when we get too much pushback on, let's try a different approach and get that, this is how it's always been, so this is how it should be. And there's obviously a balance because we've been building things in certain ways for 100, 120, 150 years or even longer. And there's reason for that. But we're at a really unique moment where we can at least step back and consider, like, how do we adjust this for efficiency, reducing waste, creating more safety opportunities and such. So there's a lot there. And when we think about these expectations being so dramatically different, like my journey through construction was very different as well. So I have a degree in technical communication, scientific and technical communication, whatever the heck that is. I still don't know. It doesn't matter. And I got hired at a construction company as a proposal writer, knowing nothing about construction. And I remember the first 6 months, I felt so overwhelmed, especially being on the federal side, acronyms everywhere, all these requirements. And it just started to click. And I was like, okay, this is interesting, exciting. But when it really got exciting for me is when I started being able to see the different technology we're using and the opportunities that were coming and where some of the younger generation was coming out and really excited in the way you are. And it's a different conversation. And obviously, you know, having a chance to host a podcast like this and speak with you is very different than writing proposal responses to RFPs, because RFP is like a swear word in my house now after too many years and too many long deadlines. But with those dramatically different expectations, and Evan, I'm going to kick this your way first. Why do you think they were so disconnected from what really unfolded? Like, what conditions in our environment in the construction industry, and it's a very common scenario, is somebody comes out of school and they think they're going to do this. They step on a job site, they start learning stuff, and they go, I had no idea all of this was even here. Like, what does that look like in your perspective? Why does this keep happening?
So I think that there are different expectations because construction really does have a bad reputation. Most people think it's old school. You know, they think, you know, we haven't changed the way that we're building buildings and that it's not a technical industry that, you know, requires an advanced education. I also think that there is this misconception that innovation at a construction company has to be BIM and VDC. And it's really interesting. I think that, you know, over the last 6 years, 7 years that I've been part of the industry, there is a new space that has opened up for folks that are interested in deploying and evaluating technology that has nothing to do with the digital model. I think those are kind of two misconceptions about the industry that we can challenge.
And your point on the VDC being the IT god of the entire construction company is so accurate, because they were some of the ones that were more progressive originally. And so they were able to grab that and go, okay. And people come to them with those questions and say, well, I know you know technology, so how might I be able to do this or change this? But you're right. As the technology becomes more accessible and more available, I think everybody has the opportunity to be some degree of technologist if they're interested. And it's going to eventually be a requirement for all of these jobs in the future, not just a nice to have. So in your experience, how does that align with what Evan said as far
as
those conceptions?
Similar as well. So from like a research lens, so starting to see these perception challenges where professionals are grappling with adopting new ways of designing or building that might lead to more environmentally friendly or more resource efficient processes, right? So there's concerns about cost and, you know, implementing some of these could initially be expensive. They don't want to touch that at all. We're having issues about complexity, but innovation doesn't really have to be complex. You can start off small by, you know, fixing that one problem that someone on site has, for example. And there's, of course, there's knowledge gaps. So some of the research that we do does translate into practice through like education and awareness. So just by trying to provide information about what's out there and educating people can lead to more curiosity and help them get more training in that field, for example, just to implement some of those on their processes. And that to us is a win. But there are these different challenges that people are seeing, and most of that can be overcome. It doesn't really have to hinder anyone from trying out new things or exploring innovative or advanced methods on their projects. And just tackling all of this, I think, is really important to advancing the industry further.
And I love your point about, you know, the focus of starting small too. It was something that we uncovered. I was working with FMI on a research report about data more specifically in the last few years. If you haven't read it, I've plugged this many times on the show, you should go check it out. It's called Harnessing the Data Advantage of Construction. But people often don't make changes because they're overwhelmed. There's a decision paralysis because, especially if you're a builder that hasn't had the opportunity to digitize heavily or adopt these more digital or advanced methods, it's overwhelming on where to start. And I always tell people, I'm like, you don't have to change everything at your company tomorrow. And actually, you're more beneficial by picking a small area that you feel the most advanced in, or you have your biggest champions, and you make those changes there. And when you start making those small innovations, you can go to the rest of the people in the company and point at that and go, look at this. When we digitized, Sam goes home at 4:30 and Shauna goes home at 4:45, and you're here, you know, working on paper, and you go home at 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night, or whatever the process might be that you're changing. And as you build those proof cases, then you get to slowly start making those incremental things. So it doesn't have to be a whole company thing. But I'd like to come back to that perception problem that you've both identified. And it's something I've heard a number of times. And I'm thankful for this conversation because I feel like it's, you know, a step in that direction in uncovering the problem. But what steps should we be taking right now to tackle that problem, whether it's something that an individual can take, like the conversation we're having here, or something that a larger construction company or potentially an education institution can have? Like, where should we be starting at this point? And I'll kick that to you first, Evan.
Yeah, I think we can start to change the narrative really by doing maybe a better job of storytelling. I think we can really start to highlight successful implementations on projects, also employees that have more diverse career paths. You know, on an individual level, I think at a company, we can also educate our teams about, you know, what possible solutions are out there, from the very mature applications that we might already be using to, you know, the early stage ideas, early stage startups where there isn't even a well-defined company yet. I think companies like Skanska, you know, we can focus on sourcing ideas from our employees. We can also just highlight the people that are actually using the technology every day, not necessarily even myself or people in innovation roles, but, you know, the people that are really deriving the most value from the tools. And then in terms of, you know, the talent pipeline, I think we can really focus on higher education and getting young people and students in particular, you know, excited about careers in construction. Technology is one way to do that, I think, to make it more attractive, pull more people in.
Yeah, I agree. I think from the individual perspective, really sharing your story and your experience is important, especially like you said, to the younger generation, trying to change that narrative of what construction really looks like, about promoting it in a positive lens. I think it's important. And I really like to emphasize collaboration between industry and academia. That's important because, you know, through construction programs that, you know, have industry advisory boards, for example, really take their curriculum serious because they try to implement really what's going on in the industry. So as soon as their students graduate, they have the skills that the industry needs. And I think that's also important in fostering research from the education level. So having faculty and students working on solutions and having an industry partner that's willing to help develop and implement those ideas on site bridges the gap between research and academia. And I find that to be really important.
And it's a cool, like, multi-layered approach too, because you have different perspectives coming from academia versus the perspective that you might have had coming through, you know, school and being in the industry for a year, or your research background. And then when you add the trade conversation to it as well, it's the perception is very unfortunate because there's this narrative that kind of started, I think, in the 80s more than anything, is you must go to college and you must get a four-year degree. And if you are a blue-collar worker, you're not going to make any money and it's going to be miserable. And that's just not true. I know a number of trade workers who make considerably more money than my friends who have gotten four-year degrees and are passionate about what they're doing because they have a craft. The work that they're doing is so beautiful in like in my house, for example. This is a small potatoes example, but I am not good with small details when it comes to building or construction. I know this, so I will never ever lay tile in my house, for example, because I know that I will never be happy with the end result of that. And the people that have the skill set to do that well, it's so impressive, and I will happily pay somebody to come do that. And it just scales as you get into bigger projects and such. And so I think as we give those examples, like you're both sharing, and tell students, hey, this is what's out there, and this is what you can do, and this is how much money you can make, and you're not going to have $100,000 in debt. Like there's a lot of important information to share. But I also know you've both worked with students a considerable amount, and we're, of course, students in construction programs at some point. So there's a perspective there that I don't have coming from TechCom. And so I'd like to hear more about those experiences. Especially, I know there's some international experience there that we can compare with the United States. So, Evan, can you give me your thoughts and experience about how you've worked with students in the past and how we can continue to bring that to others as well?
Yeah, working with students is really important to me. It's also really important to Skanska. One thing I've witnessed since I've been out of school is that we're definitely in the midst of a construction boom on college campuses as well. Beyond just inviting students to visit our sites, there's a real opportunity to engage with students in the classroom, to showcase like real examples from projects on campus, kind of like a living lab is a term that you hear a lot about. You know, at Skanska, we have footprints on a lot of college campuses and universities, including Columbia, Duke, NC State, UVA, and Virginia Tech. And I've been lucky enough to present many times in front of students, and I love doing it. We've also, in addition to just inviting students to visit the job site, we've also met them halfway. We've met them in the classroom. We've challenged students to try and solve problems that we face in construction. For example, we had a group of Duke students looking at developing a app for managing deliveries, or we had another student group looking at how can we make scissor lifts more safe. I really think that we can also, in addition to those kind of creative projects, we can also look to kind of broaden our base and engage students that are from maybe atypical majors, so not just construction management programs. And
I'm a good example
civil,
of that.
Exactly. People from different degrees, not just civil engineering and mechanical engineering.
Computer engineering.
Exactly. Looking at computer engineers and graphic design, even data analytics, obviously is becoming more important. We also have a partnership with the University of Washington where we teach an intro BIM certificate class. And the cool thing about that is that each lecture, we bring in a different expert from our Skanska VDC team. I actually was a student in that class in 2018 as a new VDC engineer at Skanska. And that's kind of what set me on my path. But 3 years later, I was teaching our intro Revit and BIM execution plan class. So a lot of the people that benefit from these classroom lectures and classes go on to become teachers in their own right. So I think we need to be doing more projects, more site visits, and more work in the classroom.
And it's such a hands-on approach too. And like I know a lot of builders will have a presence at universities in that they show up for recruiting events and they go, hey, come work for us, you're a civil engineer. But the depth of what you're talking about right now, I think that's where we get to start pulling levers and changing perceptions because, like you said, they're being encouraged to try new things. You're highlighting some of the cool opportunities. You're showing the potential for the different programs. And if it's integrated also, when you're bringing in interns and you're having them work with your organization, most of those interns, if they're good, they end up getting hired by that company later too. And so it's a really beautiful feedback loop and their friends are going to encourage their friends to go check that out because they've had a good experience. And so you can build on that, but we have to be very deliberate because it's not something that's going to happen passively by any means. How's that looked with your experience? You've also worked with a lot of students, I know.
I come from academia, so I've been teaching graduate and undergraduate classes in construction for a while. I started off during my PhD at University of Florida. I ended up teaching the construction class that shifted my perspective and changed my career path. And most of that has been like hands-on learning, incorporating technology in the classroom, trying to get students engaged early on. And after graduation, I joined the faculty at Wentworth Institute of Technology here in Boston, also just like teaching intro to BIM, Revit, estimating, and a whole bunch of other classes. But there's a point you mentioned about having industry partners guest lecturing in classrooms. And when I was a professor, I found that students really got a lot out of those particular classes, so the guest lecture classes, because they get to see what a potential career in construction could look like for them. And this ties back again into telling our stories, because we all have diverse perspectives. And a student might like estimating more than BIM or VDC, or they might like scheduling more. But having these conversations and showing them practical examples, I think, has more impact on students from what I've found. But since leaving academia, I also try to, you know, continue to give back as well. So I still do a lot of guest lectures on construction technology. I collaborate with Kellyanne Mahoney, who's on the ACS team. We do pre-college and college students outreach, trying to get them involved in construction or construction-related paths, engineering. But like to the point you also made about the trades, we also showcase the different aspects of construction that's available to everybody, because like you said, a four-year degree might not be what someone's interested in. And there's so many more opportunities that's out there. And I think also it's important to, you know, get students while they're young. So I do a couple of after-school programs, so like talking to people in the Boys and Girls Club and just showing them what they could be if they're interested. But I do try to evangelize that to target a lot of the underrepresented communities in construction, especially, you know, young girls and women. So I think that's important too, to just continuously have that industry-academia collaboration.
Both of you just said so many things that I want to respond to, so I'll just pick a couple because I'm a giant nerd and I can't help myself. The diversity conversation is such an important one, and I feel sometimes people are dismissive because they go, oh, diversity, yeah, we have a program for that. But it's so much more than that, because the different perspectives that you get to bring help you solve problems in such unique and interesting ways. And to be able to understand and bring somebody else's background to a particular problem, they might have seen something or heard something or experienced something that I might never have even had the opportunity to, that's going to get us to solve that problem in 20 minutes versus me on the internet asking Dr. Google how to help me on something specific, you know. And so finding ways to be very deliberate about that inclusiveness is great too, but also with the underrepresented groups, I know women are not very well represented in construction and minorities often aren't as well, especially in leadership roles. We're missing so many people that can fill these very empty seats right now. And so if we're not addressing people and creating an equitable environment to have people comfortable to work in construction, we're failing ourselves and we're failing all of these different people. But also, we don't all have to be civil engineers. We don't all have to get a construction management degree. You mentioned the computer engineering and science degrees. Like, the data aspect of construction is so tremendous, and everybody hears me talk about it all the time, so I'll keep it brief today. But that is such an interesting opportunity, because somebody who is a data scientist specifically can bring so much to an organization of the size of Skanska or a smaller organization, and they don't necessarily have to be where your headquarters is too. And so you're opening up opportunities to people who live in different areas and environments. And obviously we are builders, but not every single role has to, you know, have a job walk every other day. You bring them in when you need them to, but otherwise they still add value and it's a wonderful career. So I'm excited now. I'm all fired up. I'm sorry, but there's some cool stuff going on. And I'm curious, when you're speaking to students and young people in general, what fired them up when you said, oh, hey, here's a potential that you might not have expected? Evan, I'm curious, what got your students amped up about construction?
Yeah, I've given a lot of presentations recently, exactly, like trying to hype up construction technology in front of students. And I feel like the thing that they get most excited about is drones and robotics. I think it's the futuristic tools that are slowly becoming more commonplace and ubiquitous on job sites.
We got a giant robot arm right here is a wonderful example.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Listening to this conversation. I also think that students, they also get excited about seeing like practical use cases of BIM beyond the classroom. I think, you know, that they're obviously learning about BDC and BIM tools in the classroom, but to actually see real stories and real examples of practical use cases of BIM coordination on a job, I think is really important beyond just seeing flashy screenshots of the model versus what was installed, but actually hearing like real stories about how crises on projects were averted or real value. I think students get excited about that.
And the depth of the data that we have now is in the models is so much more than we had. I mean, the promise vision of BIM 15 years ago, we're actually starting to get there now. Like the amount of decisions and information and the interconnectedness is really exciting. And when you can qualify that and say like, this isn't just a model, like this connects to the schedule. This does all these things. This can help your business make decisions in a more effective way. That's when the lights start coming on. Oh, really? You can really connect the dots that way? So that's pretty excellent to hear. What about you? What really lights up your students when you work?
Yeah, I'm going to pick up from what Evan said, but I think students get really excited when you show or you present examples of like a local significant construction project that they could go to and they can visualize like the impact of the work that they could do to the world or their communities. And then you mentioned like Skanska does like the living lab project type with the projects that you have on campuses and you invite students to come in and see what's going on. And I see the students really enjoy those kinds of practical examples that they could relate to. And it's not something that's, you know, abstract to them. But one other thing I'll mention is to the younger generation, they have an increased awareness of like the environmental issues, definitely more than I had growing up. And they always have questions related to, you know, how construction contributes, but can also help tackle some of the climate change processes. So I usually have lots of questions about sustainable materials or processes that help with carbon capture and things like that. And I think that's impressive from that generation.
And it feels like technology is now making some of those sustainability conversations that we were having 10 or 15 years ago a lot more meaningful and actionable for the individual as well. But I like your point there on being able to go and say, how do I have that impact? And it's something that I've always thought about when we're doing industry research, for example, when you go through and you calculate how much rework in the industry is caused by thing or whatever, you can float out this millions, billions number. And that's alarming, obviously, in an important context to have. But we always try to break it down in smaller bites too, where we go, how does this waste tie back to a general contractor of a certain size, like Skanska size? And you say, oh, well, for every $4 billion in revenue you do, you're wasting X millions on this because your process is like that. Those things start to click then, because now it's a bit more about how do I have an impact on this? How does this impact my business and me personally? And if you talk too big picture, sometimes it's easy to get lost in the weeds a little bit. And so I like that example as far as bringing it home and being very clear about the impact that they can have on problems that we're already experiencing, you know, firsthand. I mean, just look at the craziness of the weather in the United States in the last 2 or 3 years, and it's, you know, escalating as far as that goes. And we all play a role, and construction is a big aspect of, you know, emissions and waste and everything else. So I appreciate that perspective very much. So I'd like to take a look at what the students were really surprised to learn about or see was a possibility for a career in construction that they may not have been aware of. Evan, can you share some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we've already hit on this theme in our conversation today, but I think many students are really surprised to learn that there are various alternative career paths in construction. You know, you don't need to follow this conventional path through project management or becoming a site superintendent. I think that message is kind of reinforced in school or in your initial round of internships.
That's back to the way we've always done things narrative we were talking about before. It's a good point.
Exactly. If you want to innovate, you can be in any role. You know, I obviously started in the field, then moved to pre-construction and project management, and then innovation and VDC. But I like to remind students, not that they have to follow my path, but that they really should follow their interests and explore roles that excite them. One way to do that is to, you know, interview your coworkers to find out more about what they do, even if there isn't a direct line of management there. I also advise students that joining the industry, there might be times when there are certain tasks that you have to do that you're not particularly excited about doing, like posting RFIs or doing quantity takeoff or even taking progress photos. but I try to remind them to try to see the big picture kind of value of doing those tasks and how that supports the success of a project, but also look at those as opportunities to innovate as well.
Yeah. Thankfully, we have more technology that touches takeoff and site photos and such. The doldrums are quite as bad as they might have been 5 years ago. But you're absolutely right. Not every job every day is rosy and sunshine. So it's good to have that perspective, but it's also good to hear what they're a bit surprised about. Have you encountered similar things or anything else that's a little
different? Yeah, I think Evan stole my answer.
Monster.
But I think one thing I'll add is that some students are not really aware of the diversity and inclusion efforts that are going on in construction. Of course, people still see it as a male-dominated industry or a white male-dominated industry. And that's why, you know, I keep saying it's important we share our stories and our experiences because they don't really see that. And sometimes some of that is not evident through academia until maybe they get into an internship or into a company that they're working for. So yeah, I think that's one thing we definitely need to do better, just sharing our experiences and stories and showing them how diverse actually construction is.
And you make a great point too. It's not just the business side of diversity. And we talked about that a bit earlier as far as the value that brings to your business and the different perspectives too, but it's important for people to be able to see themselves in that role potentially. And you're absolutely right. If I am a professor and I'm giving a lecture as the typical person that's in construction, as far as being a white man in my late 30s, that perception is a little bit different than the story that you are telling today and you would. And so it's important to give the opportunity to share those so others can say, oh, I can do that because I could see somebody else doing it. And I think it clicks more for other people when that does happen. And so I'm thankful that you're both here to share your perspectives. And our industry has a lot of work to do in this realm, but I am encouraged by the conversations that we're having. And they felt performative at times in the past where we go, okay, yeah, it's Women in Construction Week. And things like that are very important. We need to have those conversations and give a window to highlight that in a focused way. But the perspective should be, here is a person who's doing cool stuff who happens to be a woman, not here is a woman because they're a woman doing a thing. And I think that's a framing that is so important for us to have as we talk about the industry and empower and encourage others to be in it. And if the framing isn't right, it doesn't feel good, to put it lightly. So I thank you for mentioning that. There's a lot to consider in that realm.
I think now we have more stories and more role models to highlight as well. So that really helps.
We do. We're doing better. There's, like I said, there's a ton of work to do. And women at large make a very small percentage of the construction industry across the board. And people of color and other backgrounds make a very small percentage of leadership roles in companies as well, which is a problem because we could say, okay, we have a diversity point as far as just broad percentages, but we have to make sure we're also cultivating the opportunities for people to advance in the industry from diverse backgrounds, because having somebody in a leadership role with a different background from the other people on the leadership team brings a lot to the table. And so it's important to talk about and give a real shake to those conversations. Otherwise, nothing changes. So flipping the last question that I asked both of you, was there anything that students were generally unimpressed by that you were surprised by or expecting a very opposite reaction? Evan, I'll kick that one to you first.
Yeah, maybe this is informed by like a recent presentation I gave at Virginia Tech, but I think in general, augmented virtual reality, 3D printing, these are things I get really excited about showcasing to students, but maybe based on their reactions, I feel like a lot of students are already familiar with some of these technologies, whether they have...
Big deal.
Well, I try very hard to impress them. But I think maybe that's because they already have some level of familiarity with the hardware. Maybe they have an Oculus or HoloLens on campus that they're using for a project, or you know, maybe they have a makerspace on campus that they've already utilized for a class project. I think, you know, I've tried to show off examples of VR for design review or digital mockups or, you know, multiplayer collaborative meetings, but it doesn't seem to resonate as much as I thought it would. But that being said, I think they're at an advantage. So they may already have that familiarity. They may be unimpressed, but, you know, maybe when they enter their workforce, they'll be the ones to think of the more creative use cases on their projects.
Yeah, and you get to build on that too, because now it's not, I have to teach her how to use the thing. They already have a sense for it, and now it's how do we go big? I still hear a lot of people, especially with AR and VR, they put on an Oculus 6 years ago, and it wasn't great then. And most of my experience when I was still working at contractors was we modeled part of the building really quickly before our presentations after submitting a proposal in response to an RFP. Everybody in the room puts the goggles on and says, ooh, this is what our building looks like. And then that goes back on the shelf and everybody goes out and builds. And the perspective on the technology capability is 6 years out of date. And so if you're out there listening and your take on AR and VR and the tech is a bit dated, I beg you, go to a conference and ask somebody to give you a headset and take a peek, because it is very different and you can do some really cool stuff. So how about you? Has there been anything where students were just like, yeah, get that away from me, I'm not interested?
Yeah, I've had a similar experience. The students will humble you. Like, you would go out there very enthusiastic about technology and robots, and they just unimpressed. And I think the experience I've had is people being unimpressed with some of these emerging technologies. You always have that inevitable question, what's the point? Are the robots going to take our jobs? Why are we using them? So they just don't want to touch some of those. And also on the flip side, I've had students who are very unimpressed with traditional construction methods, and they want to learn about, you know, the ARs and the VRs, especially like when I was teaching estimating, like you have to start off with doing the manual things before you get into takeoff or whatever you're using. And it's, you know, I try to come with a balance, try to make them understand, you know, you can be on both ends. It's really a balance between, you know, using the traditional methods, but using technology to improve the processes or make things, you know, better. So I try to come at it with both lens, and because I've learned that some students just don't want to hear about the robots. They don't want to hear about the drones and the laser scanners. They probably have like traditional background. Some of them have worked, or they have, you know, family members that work in construction. So they're used to that side of things. So I think it's just important to get them to see that both work hand in hand and one doesn't replace the other, I think is an important message.
Yeah, I don't think we're at any risk of the robots rolling in and taking jobs away, but especially with the shortage and, you know, just augmentation. That's the talk track that I always lean back on is, these are tools, and they're tools and not replacements, that allow people to do the things that people do well and allow technology to do things at scale that people simply can't, or it's too dangerous. It's like, do you really want to go in a confined space, or do you want to send Spot down to go do that laser scan? Like, I'm cool not being in that pipe. Thank you so much. Like, you know, so there's a lot of, I think it's an extra layer of education actually to ensure people don't feel threatened by the tool, but also to your point, they go, what is the point of this? Showing them that, and you go, hey, this is why we're doing this. It's not just because it's neat. It is, but also there is a value and a betterment to the contractors and the people, but also to the owners, because the information, the rich data that they're gathering from all the different tools that we're laying on in our projects today. So it's pretty exciting. And so I've got two more questions for both of you. Thank you again for joining me here. And this is a recurring one that I ask every guest, and it's one of my favorites because I'm always surprised by the answers, unless you say tape measure or phone. If you say those two, I will not be surprised, but I'll still be happy that you answered it. So what is one tool that you'll always bring to every project that you work on? Fope, take it away.
Okay. At the risk of sounding too academic, I would say adaptability is a mindset I approach every project with. And it's, you know, something I've kind of heard you say throughout our conversation today. You have to be open to new ideas. You have to be, you know, be willing to ask questions and tackle the norm and find out unique solutions to different problems. So it's a skill that has, you know, left me open to change, has brought me throughout different career roles and opportunities. And it consistently just allows me to enhance the quality of my projects, I would say.
I love that. And both of you can speak to this very directly. Like, it's very uncommon for a construction, if you're out on site every day, for every day to be exactly the same. And if you're not adaptable to some degree, you're going to struggle to be excited about your work because, you know, surprises come. And so being able to pivot in the moment and think about new perspectives, I think it's incredibly important. So I love that answer. That's great. Evan, how about you? What's one tool you'll bring to every project, no matter what you're working on?
Yeah, I think I went in maybe a slightly different direction, but I think a sense of humor is really important.
That's good.
I think, you know, ultimately we work in construction and in a people business. You know, developing trust and a rapport with people is really important. We also work in a very tense industry with a lot of heated arguments and tense negotiations and adversarial relationships. And I think sometimes it can be really helpful to break the ice. You know, humor can go really a long way in making a connection with someone in the field, developing that relationship. I've observed a lot of positive relationships between people on the field, and I feel like, yeah, a sense of humor is underappreciated.
You're speaking to my heart right now because I'm rarely serious. Like, you probably picked up on this a little bit as we're getting into our conversation today, and it might not be present in our serious tone of our conversation here, but it's such a rewarding way. It's so rewarding when you have a work environment where you can still playfully have a bit of fun too. And we're still obviously all here to do work, and there's business things and such. But like you said, the depth of the relationship that you get to have when you can use some humor in very difficult situations goes a long way. I mean, I'm thinking back to the bid reviews that I've seen where people are very tense and, you know, millions of dollars are at stake, or there's a schedule slippage and everybody's losing their mind and liquidated damages, or, you know, a month away or something. And when you can diffuse some of those tense situations with humor, I think people settle. And then you get to get back to the problem and you start working it out instead of just serious business all day long. I mean, being serious has its place, but I try to keep that place as compartmentalized as possible. Well, I love both of those answers, and they are both brand new ones for the show. So 10 points for that. Last question for both of you. If our listeners want to get a hold of you or reach out, or if there's anything you'd like to tell them about today, what's the best way to do that? Fope?
LinkedIn. Fope Folluabade Masin.
Great. And the details on spelling and show names are always in the show notes and such. And I think we'll include links to those as well. Evan, how about you? How do people reach out to you?
Yeah, feel free to reach out on LinkedIn, Evan Riley. You know, if you're a student interested in career advice, or, you know, a startup looking for feedback on a product, happy to talk.
I love that. And the feedback loop is so important too, because if we're building all these tools in a silo, we've got a disconnect that ends up being problematic, especially on the field. So thank you both for joining me. And of course, I am your host, Eric Thomas. If you're listening on the audio version of this, I'm going to plead and beg with you to pop over to YouTube. The link is in the channel in the show notes, so you can check that out. We are in the Autodesk Technology Center. And like, who wouldn't want to take a look at all these robots? I mean, this is just really cool space. And if you want to reach out to me, of course, you can find me on LinkedIn as well, or on Twitter at builder_digital. And then finally, I would be the worst and most bland podcast host ever, or maybe this makes me boring, I don't know, to ask you politely to go out and review our show. If you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, go bump the 5-star button, write a couple words about how you're feeling. And you can find us on YouTube if you look for the Autodesk Construction Cloud channel. So on that final note, goodbye.